Today we're going to do a little thinking about worldviews, but I want to start with actually a look at the past, especially the American Civil War. I'm a real junkie when it comes to history. I'll read anything I can find, especially American history. And of course, of all the events that have happened in American history, I would guess one of the biggest and the one that gets so many books written about it is the Civil War, the North against the South. And you think about what an epic struggle that was, up and down America, along the coastline and rivers, huge armies meeting, clashing on these battlefields. Something like 600,000 men died as a result. I heard that more died actually from disease in the camps than they did in the battlefield. But years ago, my wife and I took our boys and we went to Gettysburg. And you know, up till then, I'd been looking at maps and kind of following where armies were. But when you show up on the actual battlefield and you see how massive it is, how big, you need a car to get around. It'd take you days to try to walk the battlefield. It's super impressive. Well, with that as a background, I'm going to be referring to the Civil War again several other times. But I wanted us to think about the war that we're actually involved in right now. The Civil War is 150 years old, but we're in a war right now. And I know most people are going to think of the war against radical Islam, but I'm thinking of something different. Let me give you a quote here from Charles Colson, Chuck Colson, head of prison fellowship, one that was Nixon's hatchet man. He said, "The culture war is not just about abortion, homosexual rights, or the decline of public education. These are only skirmishes. The real war is a cosmic struggle between worldviews." So I want to really stress this because I think what he says is so important. We as Christians get caught up in these individual flare-ups that we encounter in newspapers or from our friends or at church or whatever it is on same-sex marriage or homosexuality or whatever it is. And rightfully so, we should be fighting for the Christian perspective in this, what's best for most people. But we get to thinking that this is the war, but the real war, as Colson said, is a struggle between worldviews. So let me go back to the Civil War to illustrate this difference. I found Gettysburg really interesting. I read about Grant and Vicksburg, Chickamauga, Antietam, and things like that. Well, those were individual battles, important and vital, but to get the bigger picture, you have to back up and see a map of the United States. It was the blue and the gray fighting each other. Why were these battles taking place? Because there was a very different outlook on what American politics should be about. After all, the South called itself the Confederacy, and the stress there is a confederacy, a loose joining of states. So here's an area of the country that believed in states' rights, and it was going up against the Union. You can see in that name the tight joining of these states together in some bond. And so you had a struggle as a worldview, you had a struggle about what should American government agencies look like? What should America look like? Loose-knit or tightly bound together? So that was the worldview that sparked all these individual battles. James Dobson, the head of Focus on the Family, has said something pretty close to what Colson said. Nothing short of a great civil war, there it is, nothing short of a great civil war of values rages today throughout North America. Two sides with vastly differing and incompatible worldviews are locked in a bitter conflict that permeates every level of society. And I wanted to stress in this part, he says it permeates every level of society. So in other words, you talking to your neighbor, you dealing with a coworker, you having family over for a special dinner, the Civil War may take place anywhere. It can happen on all levels of society. And so we need to be prepared. Now the question is, how are we doing in the Civil War? Well, let me give you another quotation by Chuck Colson. My guess is most of you have a pretty good idea of how we're doing in this fight. He says, "The church's singular failure in recent decades has been the failure to see Christianity as a life system or worldview that governs every area of existence." So he says, we have failed to see Christianity as not just a place to gather on Sunday and sing nice songs and to feel good and to join small groups and share each other's burdens. We are not seeing Christianity as a worldview that governs every area of our lives. So I want us to think about this. We are all combatants in this war. You know, in the Civil War, the armies marched off, and for the most part, the civilians didn't struggle and die as much as they did in later wars, like World War II. So you had the combatants that you waved goodbye to as they went off to fight and hoped to welcome back, and you had the civilians at home. Well, that's not true anymore. We are all combatants in this war, and let me illustrate that with just three verses from Paul in the New Testament. Here he is in 2 Corinthians 10. We demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. Do you hear the war language there? We're supposed to go out and demolish arguments. We're supposed to take captive thoughts. That sounds like offensive warfare, doesn't it? But he also says in Colossians 2, see to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy. So we don't want to be a prisoner of war. We don't want to be taken captive. And we can be, because there certainly is plenty of deceptive philosophy these days. Later on, Paul in Ephesians says this, put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. Put on the full armor of God. Why do we need armor? Because we're fighting a war. So Paul talks about that a lot. Warfare is happening around us. We are part of it, whether we realize it or not. So let's talk about what a worldview is. Let's do a definition of a worldview. We all have a worldview. All of us. You might think of it as the picture of life. It's like wearing a pair of glasses. It changes everything. It's how we see reality. For example, from a Christian perspective, reality is what? It's more than just the material world, isn't it? The Christian says, yes, there is a material world, but there's a supernatural world as well. So many of us do not share this, but we have, that's part of a worldview, is what we think reality consists of. We can also think of a worldview as how we interpret all of life when things happen. Why are they happening? Worldviews are assumptions that we have about the world, the way it really is. Okay, so based on that, we've got a pretty good idea of what a worldview is. Let's take a look at two primary worldviews that are clashing that Dobson and Colson were talking about. Now, are there more than these two worldviews? Yes. I would add Marxism and Islam and maybe the New Age, but I wanted to look at two in particular. One is Christianity, and the other is, you could call it secular humanism, or the skeptic, or the non-believer, the rationalist, atheist. But anyway, let's call it secular humanist. Okay, so we got Christianity against the secular humanist. What I'd like to do is talk about the four key questions that every worldview tries to deal with. And first, we'll just look at the differences, and then we're going to go back and take a look at why I think the Christian worldview is a far superior worldview. Okay, so here we go. There are four key questions every worldview is going to try to answer. One is, where'd the human race come from? What are our origins? Number two, now that we're here, what are we supposed to do? What's wrong and what's right? Number three is, what in the world has gone wrong with the human race? We've gone off the rails. Nobody doubts that. We've got plenty of people that say, oh yeah, you're right, the world is really messed up, thanks to people. And then the last question is, how do we fix people? What's the fix device here? It's got to be some way. So one more time, origins, where do we come from? Morality, what's right and wrong? Problem, what's wrong with people? And solution, how do we fix people? So those are the four key questions. So let's take each of the four and look at Christianity versus secularism or secular humanism. Origins. What does Christianity say about origins? It says there's a God who exists. God interacted and created this world. Humans came along because of God's creation. And he made us in his image. We're some kind of special image bearers. And finally, I would say a fourth thing is our origin is to be in a world where history is actually going somewhere. God's designed this universe, this world, to go someplace. For example, we had Adam and Eve, then we get the Jewish race under Abraham, and then we get Christianity under Jesus. There's a linear direction that history is going. Now, what if we take secularism and look at those same issues as far as origins go? Where do they say we've come from? Not God. We're an accident. We're a fluke. If you ran the clock back of history, everything would be different if it ran forward again. Humans are not special image bearers. We're just a more sophisticated animal. And history's not going anywhere. History's whatever you can do to tug on it. If you're Marx, if you're Lenin, if you're Stalin, if you're Mao, if you're Pol Pot, you grab it and you push it the way you think it ought to go. So is there a huge difference? Yes. Christianity and secularism do not agree at all about origins. Morality is the same thing. We're going to get a total disagreement. The Christian view of morality is that it's God's nature is the standard of right and wrong, that there is real right and wrong, and that we have free will to choose the right or the wrong. And as a result of the free will, we're held accountable for all the things we've messed up. So that's our view, the Christian view of morality. What's the secular view? Well, there's no standard out there any place. It's just up to us to create our own standards. We don't really have free will. We probably shouldn't be held accountable. What's the problem? Third question. Why are we in trouble? A Christian says one word, disobedience. That ruined our relationship with God. It ruined our relationship with each other. It even ruined our relationship with nature, and it messed up nature big time. So the natural world and the human world is struggling because we've shaken our fists in the face of God. And we have these tremendous guilt feelings because we know we've done wrong. We can't even live up to our own moral standards. Now, what does the secular view say? The problem is not out, is not because of what we have done and shaking our fists at God, because there is no God. So our problem has got to be something that's fixable. We can do it. We're not bad creatures. We just had society mess us up. So already you can see a difference as far as the solution goes. Christianity says we are broken. We are incapable of saving ourselves. Salvation must come from outside of us. It's going to be unmerited. There's no way we can earn it. We just do too much wrong, and we must submit to God. That's just the opposite for the secular perspective. Salvation is in us. We'll take care of it. It will be merited. We will do it, and we don't do it through submitting to God. Okay, so you've now heard real quickly two worldviews and how they differ on those four issues. Origin, morality, problem, solution. Now here's where you come in as a Christian. All of us as Christians have to make the case that Christianity offers the most reasonable answers and that it most closely corresponds to reality. Christianity is reasonable. It's not crazy. It's not irrational. It actually has more reasonable answers to those four questions than secularism. And it most closely corresponds to the way the world really is. So we're going to see that right now. This time, let's go back to the four questions, but I'm going to suggest I think Christianity has a much stronger, more realistic, more reasonable worldview than secularism. So let's start with origins. Okay, which worldview is closer to the reality? Well, what is the reality of origins? Now scientists are telling us the universe had a beginning. It has not been here forever. One time there was nothing, and then there's something. So I'll leave it up to you. Which seems more rational, that somebody could create something or that nothing could create something? The secularist is going to say the universe created itself. But that's an impossibility. Nothing doesn't produce something. So I think we have God as the start. If there's a big bang, then you need a big banger. Somebody's got to strike the match, light the fuse, get things rolling. I think that makes far more sense to say Christianity offers a better worldview as far as the origins of the universe. But now we got the universe here. Then time went by and life came about. Scientists are absolutely struggling to try to figure out how you can get life from non-life. Well, here's the worldview issue again. Does life come from non-life, or does life come from the hand of a designer or creator? The Christian view seems far closer to the truth because nobody can figure out, without God, how you can turn inorganic things into organic things. Here's the third part of the origins. Which worldview seems closest? Look at the design that's out in the universe and the design that's in us. It's amazing. The worldview of the Christian says, there's a God. He's rational. He loved what he did. He's like a master architect. There's design in the universe because there's a designer. And there's design in us. There's DNA that has a blueprint for how to build us. And if you have a blueprint, there's got to be an architect to design the blueprint. It's computer code, by the way. It's a four-chemical base computer code. Where do you get computer code? From a coder. Bill Gates said it's the most comprehensive, complex computer code ever. And I think he knows computer coding. So how do you get design? Does it just happen? Or is it more likely that a designer was involved? Things don't just randomly fall into this beautifully designed system that we have on the large scale and the small scale. Then there's consciousness. Origin. How do we get consciousness? How does inorganic, inert matter suddenly wake up? I think the best choice, again, between worldviews is not the secular one that says, well, inorganic things just came together and enough synapses joined over time and things became self-aware. Actually, scientists are struggling with this. It's called the problem of consciousness because they can't figure out how we get consciousness from just matter that's sitting around. Rocks don't think. The tide doesn't think. Hydrogen atoms don't think. But we do. So how do you get that? Which worldview is most likely true to account for consciousness? I'd say Christianity, far better than secularism. So, question number one, where do we come from? I think the Christian worldview works far better than secularism. Let's go to number two. What's right and what's wrong? Well, if you talk to enough people, you know what they'll say? They do believe in right and wrong. They do believe there's an absolute standard out there. They won't say that. But just cut in front of them in line or start to steal something that belongs to them, and they're going to say, hey, that's not right. And you say, well, that's your standard. I have a different standard because, after all, there's no external standard. We just make them up as we go. They're not going to buy that. They're going to say, put that down. You're taking my material. So we all believe in a right and wrong. Which worldview says that's the case? Christianity. We hold people to a higher standard than animals. If an animal gets loose and kills somebody out of a zoo, do we put the animal on trial? Do we say that animal was immoral? No, we hold people to a higher standard. Which actually doesn't make any sense if you have a worldview that's secular that says we're all just animals. Again, in the area of morality, we often say you should or you shouldn't do something. Why do we say that? We should never use should language if we're secularists, because that's imposing a worldview on them that's your worldview. So if you say, well, Hitler should not have killed the Jews, the question is, why not? Just because you don't like it? Or is there a standard of behavior that he ruined and you're thinking is a standard outside of you, outside of your group? He broke some kind of bigger nature's law? Yeah, so when we use language like you should and shouldn't, we do all the time. That makes far more sense in the Christian worldview than it does in the secular worldview. We say there's a should and a shouldn't because there's a standard beyond us. It's not just I don't like it. We feel that it is absolutely wrong to do something. All right, let's put the problem solution. This would be the third and fourth issues. What's our problem? What's the solution? Which worldview works best? Well, let me do this. Let me go through things that people have turned to in the past to say, here's how we fix the human problem. And let me ask you, which worldview seems more realistic? So let's take political systems. So Lenin, well, let's take Marx. Marx comes along and he says, let's fix capitalism. It'll work great. And it did on paper. Well, they put it into effect, didn't work so well. And Lenin comes along and says, we just got to be a little tougher. And then Stalin comes along. Well, to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. So what he says, and so he kills 10, 20, 30 million, whatever, Ukrainians. Pol Pot says he's going to fix Cambodia. We've had all these political systems come along. People have these wonderful utopian ideas. This will fix it. This is our problem. We don't have the right political system. Well, I haven't seen a political system fix everything yet. Every time there's an election that comes along, people offer these wonderful plans and people get excited, they vote them into office, and then they're all so disappointed when that doesn't fix anything. So, which worldview seems more effective when it comes to political systems? The Christian worldview says people are broken. If you put them into power and you give them a lot of power, they're going to abuse it. And so the American system was set up to separate the powers because we don't trust individuals. So you want to have a Congress and a court and a president who don't always see eye to eye. In fact, that's dangerous. Whereas with the secular worldview, you say politics will save us all. No, it doesn't. It ends up repressing people. Okay, let's keep going. Let's try something else. Problem solution. Maybe we don't have enough money. This might be the secular perspective. We just need money. Pull people out of poverty and that'll solve things. The Christian worldview says you can put all the money you want into somebody's hand, but if they're a broken individual, that's not going to fix their heart. It might give them some new clothing. It might give them better health. But it's not going to fix the person down deep. And so here we are in the United States, the most affluent nation ever. We have more people with more wealth, more spending money, more leisure time, more cars, the houses full of fun products, toys. So we have all this affluence. Are we a happier, more steady, more self-assured nation? No. The suicide rate has gone up. There's more neuroticism. There's more use of drugs, more depression, more anxiety, jitters. Affluence has not solved our problem. So as a secular perspective, that doesn't work. Oh, what about science? A lot of the secularists look to science. We just need a more scientific approach to life. Well, I'd say science does some wonderful things. I'm so glad that there are pills to take and there are implants to help us. So great. I love science. I'm all for science. The situation is, though, that science can fix our outside and fix some of our insides, but it can't fix our hearts. Science doesn't answer the question of values. Science doesn't answer the question of self-esteem. It doesn't provide love. It doesn't provide family. It doesn't provide community. Science, and it's not a fault of science, it's just not something that science is supposed to deal with. So you can drape the human race with up-to-date science, that's great, but you're still going to have people who are broken on the inside, and we see it all the time. Science has gone down some dark paths. We've had eugenics. We've had hydrogen bombs. We've had lobotomies. At one time, everybody bought into this. Kind of scary. Here's another one that secularists may say, and that's education will solve things. We just have a system here that don't have enough people educated. Really. We've had, in the last 100, 150 years, far better education. But I would say our society is just as mean and spiteful as ever. In fact, I think I'm a lit person. I spend a lot of time teaching literature. I think, for example, some of Shakespeare's best villains were the most educated out of all the people in his stories. So education can make you sharp, but it can make you an evil, sharp person. And again, it doesn't fix your heart that Christianity talks about. So problem, solution, which worldview? I think Christianity is far better because it says the things that you depend on, like science and affluence and education, will not solve your problems. Well, if we Christians have the right answers, why aren't we winning? Now, I know we're going to win in the long run, but isn't it amazing? You watch America, and it just looks like it's going downhill fast, and you say, what are we doing wrong? Well, I'm going to suggest three things and offer a challenge here. I think we're struggling in this civil war that we have. I'd say three reasons. One is lack of knowledge. What do I mean by that? Well, I'm not sure that we really understand our side. I'm not sure we understand Christian theology, the basics of Christianity. And I don't think we understand the other side, secularism. We can demonize it, but do we really know what they're up to and what they're trying to accomplish? I don't think so. I read somewhere the other day that something like one-third of evangelicals believes in psychic power, believes in psychics, and like 20% believes in reincarnation. Wait, these are evangelicals, come on. Talk about not knowing your own faith. There's a book by Chuck Colson again, you can tell I like Chuck Colson, it's called The Faith. And it's a really good book to understand your Christian roots, your theology. And there's a magazine I've always endorsed, it's called World. And it's like a Christian Time magazine that looks at the entire world. Everything from education to politics to sports to science to movies. And it shows you what the secular world is doing, but it gives you the Christian perspective on it. Really powerful. So number one, here's my challenge. Let's make sure we understand our side, the Christian worldview, and the secular worldview. Secondly, how about we listen? Just simply listen to a talk show or something. Listen to what people are saying. Don't tune them out because you don't agree with them. And ask questions. If you don't feel like you're up to challenging their worldview, just ask them questions about their worldview. You're just in learning mode. And that'll give you all sorts of knowledge. So, number one, why are we in trouble? Number one, I don't think we know as much as we should. Number two, I would say we have a lack of confidence. I was thinking about the fact that I lead an apologetics class at our church. And maybe a year ago, I asked people if they would just write up a short blurb for what the class has done for them. And over again, people independently came up with a single word, confidence. Studying apologetics gave them a lot of confidence. So if you feel like you're really hesitant and you're not sure whether the Christian worldview is superior, I've got a resource list. I'll be glad to send it out to you. So you can just contact me, either gary.zacharias@gmail.com or gary@apologeticsforlife.org. And I'll give you a resource list that you can dig into. Secondly, under lack of confidence, we could be listening to good apologists. This is a golden age for apologetics. By the way, apologetics just means arguing for the Christian faith being true. It's just making a case for the truth of Christianity. So there are all sorts of good apologists we can listen to. And in our case, here at in Escondido, we have a church, Emmanuel Faith Community Church. We have an apologetics class, and we have been holding this for over 11 years, starting our 12th year. So you can come in person or go to YouTube or Facebook if you can't make it, because we've been putting a video together every night that we have the class. It's Thursdays. Just type in EFCC Apologetics for YouTube and EFCC Apologetics for Facebook, and you'll see some of our videos and might find them interesting and hope to find them helpful in establishing confidence. Also, I've started a group called the San Diego County Apologetics Network, that's SDCAN, and we offer a free learning environment where you can pick up a certificate in apologetics. It's a curriculum that will probably take you around 20 hours, give or take, and you can either read or watch videos or listen to audio things, answer some questions, and you get a really nice looking certificate. It'll give you the basics in apologetics, and it'll improve your confidence a lot. Number three, what's the third reason that I think we're not doing as well as we could? So, we don't know enough, we're not confident enough, and number three, I think we tend to compartmentalize. Now, what I mean by that is, we're great Christians on Sunday, we sing the songs joyously, and we hug and shake hands, and we share with each other in our Sunday morning classes, but then Monday comes, and then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we live much more like the world lives. We don't even think about Christian things in many cases, which is really sad. So we compartmentalize it. We don't want to be doing that. And I think this is one of the key things we can do. If you want to think about worldviews and avoid compartmentalization, whatever you're doing, maybe it's a book you're reading, a TV show you're watching, a movie you've gone to, just ask yourself a very simple question. How does fill in the blank reveal a worldview? For example, the Da Vinci Code, the book. Oh, that worldview was hostile to Christianity. My wife and I went to see a movie called Rio, about some birds. And toward the end of that movie, one of the birds is told, trust your heart. And he does, and all sorts of good things come about. Well, that's not a Christian worldview. So my challenge is that you take this away and use this one for everything. How does this thing you're watching or listening, how does it reveal a worldview? Almost everything has a worldview to it. As far as getting rid of this compartmentalization, talk to friends and members in church classes during the week. And consider what your mission field is. So are the missionaries the ones that just go to Africa or Asia or Europe? No. We are all missionaries right here at our house, at our job, with our kids, our grandkids. We're all apologists. We're all to make a case for the truth of Christianity. And we need to think about, we are all missionaries. And of course, what's one way to avoid compartmentalization? Pray, and pray during the week. Well, let me end on this. This is a quote from Nancy Piercy talking about worldviews. Having a Christian worldview means being utterly convinced that biblical principles are not only true, but also work better in the grit and grime of the real world. Boy, amen. Let me say that one more time. Having a Christian worldview means being utterly convinced that biblical principles are not only true. Now, of course, we do believe they're true, and that's great. But what else do we need to be convinced of? That they work better in the grit and grime of the real world. And that's what we can do. We can talk to people who have a different worldview and say, but the Christian worldview works better. It's closer to reality. So I hope this helped you think about that. I've got a resource list that will, I hope, expand what I've talked about as far as worldviews. And I hope we think about this in the next week or two. There's a world out there that needs Jesus. And we need to be thinking in worldview terms to reach them.